Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. At the end of the Biden administration, two new national monuments were created in California under the Antiquities Act. Chuckwalla near Joshua Tree National Park and Satitla Highlands near Mount Shasta. In this show, we'll profile the latter of these two, Satitla, which is one of the sources for the volcanic spring waters that feed some of the most important watersheds in California, including the majestic Crystal Clear Fall River, one of California's blue ribbon trout streams, and one of the largest spring-fed rivers in the West. Later on in the show, we'll hear from Brandy McDaniels, Pitt River Nation lead for the Satitla Highlands National Monument, to tell us about what a vital and special place this is for both nature and people, especially the Pitt River tribe. They've called it home for millennia. But first, our guest is Sam Davidson. Sam is the public lands director in California for the national conservation group Trout Unlimited, who partnered with the Pitt River Nation and others to get the Satitla Highlands established as a new national monument. Sam Davidson, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you for having me on, Dave.
Well, before we go any further, I'm sure a lot of our listeners really don't know anything about Trout Unlimited. Give us a brief history of the organization and what it is, what do you do and why?
Yeah, so Trout Unlimited was formed in 1959 in Michigan, and we're now the largest and oldest sportsman's group dedicated to cold water conservation, which basically translates to protecting, restoring, and reconnecting streams that have or should have trout and salmon in them. And we operate in most of the states of the United States of America.
And full disclosure, I am one of your Fisher Folk members.
Oh, thank you.
And just tell me a little bit, maybe explain to our listeners, especially salmon fishing guides, people that used to be able to salmon fish on the Sacramento River, for example, care deeply about these issues because, you know, without the fish in the river, they can't do their thing. They can't practice their craft, and they haven't been able to for a few years now.
Yeah, for the past 2 years, there has been no salmon fishery inshore or offshore because of poor returns. And it's one of the great tragedies of our time, I think, to many of us. Salmon are, you know, among the most remarkable animals, at least that I know of. And they've evolved in California with its uniquely diverse landscape and ecology to thrive with, to populate multiple river systems and use a variety of essentially breeding strategies and migration strategies to do that. And for that reason, for example, in the Central Valley rivers, the Sacramento and the San Joaquin watersheds, salmon have evolved four, especially in the Sacramento system, four distinct life histories, so that they are utilizing the habitat to its greatest kind of efficiency, if you want to think about it that way. And now there are not enough to sustain even a recreational fishery.
Yeah, it's been very sad. Anyway, let's talk about a success story, a potential success story.
Yeah.
Trout Unlimited's involvement in one of the newest national monuments in the national park system, the Satitla National Monument in northeastern California. So let's first tell us, like, where is this? Give us a geographic setting of where this new national monument is.
Right. So this new national monument, it's called the Satitla Highlands National Monument, and it's actually not managed by the Park Service. It's national forest land, and it will be administered by the U.S. Forest Service. The geographic location of it is about 30 miles east-northeast of Mount Shasta. The region is called the Medicine Lake Volcanic Basin, and it is a remote area, and it's sparsely populated. And, you know, as it happens, it's vitally important for people who enjoy fishing and for the state's water supply.
Yeah, let's talk about the unique geology there, because a lot of people are not aware that the Medicine Lake volcano is one of the largest in the Cascade Range. It's not a towering peak like Shasta. It doesn't stand out in the landscape, but and it's a shield volcano, much like the Hawaiian Islands. It's huge and really fascinating geology there, isn't it?
Very much so. I believe it's the largest formation of its type in North America. It's this shield volcano. And it has a very porous surface. So over the years and annually, it absorbs a lot of rain and snow melt. And it ends up filtering and storing it underground. And what happens to that water from there is why Trout Unlimited and other sporting organizations were strongly supportive of the creation of this monument.
Well, and let's talk about water, because that's important to Trout Unlimited, I'm sure. And this is a really interesting aquifer up there, a set of aquifers, because it feeds some of the most spectacular fisheries in the Western United States. For example, Fall River in northeastern California is the largest spring-fed river system, I think, in the United States. I know west of the Mississippi it is. It's spectacular. And doesn't the water come from the Sitla Highlands?
Exactly. As we spoke about earlier, there, you know, the landscape under the Sitla Highlands is porous, and it absorbs and filters a lot of water. Like some studies suggest as much water is contained there as in California's 200 largest surface reservoirs combined.
Wow.
And a big slug of that water works its way underground, downhill. There's very little surface water in the Sitla Highlands. There's very little flowing surface water, other than sort of, you know, seasonal, like post-rain event runoff. But there are a few standing water bodies in the highlands, Medicine Lake being the principal example. But most of the water is underground there, and it works its way downhill, much of it, and comes to the surface in one of the largest freshwater spring complexes in the western U.S., which is the Fall River Springs Complex, which is almost 60 miles to the southeast of Medicine Lake itself, and becomes the sole source for one of the most famous trout fishing streams in California, maybe the western U.S., which is the Fall River, which is California's largest spring-fed river system. And if you visit the springs, most of which are within a unique state park, California State Park, called Ajumawi Lava Springs State Park, which is only the only park accessible by boat to get across to the area where the springs, where the water's actually sort of coming out of the ground. You need a floating device to get you over there. You can also camp over there. But anyway, the Fall River is a unique fishery because of its continuous flow. Even in times of sustained drought, that the flows in the Fall River vary very little. And because of the kind of unique hydrology and chemistry of that stream system, it's incredibly productive ecologically. It has dense hatches of macroinvertebrate insects, and it has a dense population of native rainbow trout, which have evolved to spawn in two different seasons, which, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of that phenomenon having happened anywhere else. Most rainbow trout spawn only in the spring.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. And it is a spectacular place. The Fall River Valley, with the beautiful Fall River flowing through it, when you go there, and I try to go there every summer, it really feels like you've been transported to like Montana, dropped in the middle of Montana when you go there and just look around and go, you know, with the beautiful ranches, and it's just a spectacular place.
Agreed. It's the Fall River Valley is kind of a breathtaking spot. There, I agree completely. I encourage everybody to see it at least once in their lifetime. From parts of the valley, you can see Mount Shasta to the northwest, and the Fall River system itself is just this beautiful, lazy river meandering through all of these agricultural fields mainly. It's because there's so much water in that area, it's highly productive agriculturally. And the principal, there's so much water that the principal crop in that valley, at least at one time, and maybe it still is, was rice.
Yeah. It's quite amazing. And the river itself is so different from other rivers in California. Like for example, the Upper Sacramento River or the McLeod River, which are, they're more rocky, what are called freestone type rivers. This river is just so lazy and meandering and so crystal clear. And it also has this beautiful grass called Z-grass. I forget the exact name for it. But the way it flows underneath you, if you're on a boat just looking down it, it is mesmerizing. And you can see the trout, you know, just swimming in and out of the grass. It's just one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life.
Mesmerizing is a good word for it. It is truly. If you're floating the river, you can easily get distracted from the fishing. And it really is a unique river system, certainly in California. And it is reminiscent of some of the waters you find in Montana, especially with these wide open landscapes with ringed by mountains and
ranches. I would be floating along on a boat and look over and see cowboys and dogs, you know, rounding up cattle off in the distance. And I was with a fishing guide friend of mine, and he said, look over there and look at these trout rising out in front of you. Tell me you don't feel like you're in Montana right now. I laughed, and that's right when I hooked a really nice rainbow trout.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, on the water is very clear, as you mentioned, and for that reason, you're mostly like sight fishing for trout there. Like you're looking for fish moving and or, you know, sort of hanging in one spot or another. And then folks will position a boat to be able to make a presentation to them. And the fish in that river grow, as you know, are very healthy, and they grow to large sizes. In fact, there are fish in there that are steelhead size, you know, like well over 20 inches.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a unique stream system, and it's a unique fishery, and it's been recognized as such by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, which has designated it, the Fall River, a wild and heritage trout water. So it's managed for its wild trout. That is, it's not hatchery stocked or supplemented.
Tell us a bit about the drive from the tribal people up there, Trout Unlimited, all of the different partners. Tell us about what was the historical background of pushing to make this an actual national monument?
Right. As I mentioned earlier, the tribe has been fighting for, decades to protect its homeland from proposed developments and to keep it in its natural state. So the tribe was the lead entity in driving the campaign to create a national monument for the Sitla Highlands, because in large measure, it deserves to be a national monument. If you look at the values for which a place can be and should be designated a national monument, the Sitla Highlands checks every box. It has very high cultural, historic, scientific, environmental, and recreational values. And it also, it's one of the principal sources of water for one of the two major water supply systems on which the state of California relies. So the national monuments can be created by an act of Congress, that is, through a piece of legislation. They can also be created by through executive action by a president. And since 1906, when the Antiquities Act was passed, it virtually every president has done that. And President Biden designated two monuments in the toward the end of his term in California, Chuckwalla and mountains down in Southern California, and the Sotillo Highlands, about which we're speaking. And I think it was in part an acknowledgement of in both cases, of the importance of these places to tribal people and the interest, the growing interest of tribal peoples in having more of a say in and more of a hand in how places of importance to them are managed and protected.
And I hate to ask this, but I feel like I have to. Can a president undo a national monument status? Because we have a new administration in there now.
Right. I think that's, I don't know the answer to that, Dave. It's a legal question. I think if the Supreme Court has made clear that presidents have authority to establish monuments, and it's not, most folks, at least that I work with or have read about, legal scholars and such, don't believe that the president has the power to reverse a monument designation or to reduce the size of a monument, things of that sort. But it's that question will be President Trump in his first term, through executive order, reduced the size of two monuments in Utah. And that was challenged in court. And that litigation is, I think, on hold until such time as it's attempted again. Because Biden, when President Biden came into office, he reversed that order.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Sam Davidson from Trout Unlimited as we profile the new Sotillo Highlands National Monument in Northern California. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Let's return now to our conversation with Sam Davidson as we explore the new Sotillo Highlands National Monument near Mount Shasta in Northern California. Trout Unlimited and lots of non-governmental organizations try to do lots of restoration work on rivers and streams and just try to restoring habitat. And a lot of times they rely on federal grant money for things like that. Would you care to address, you know, how problematic that could possibly be in, you know, this new administration with different value sets that they have?
Sure. I can speak to that a little bit. Organizations like Trout Unlimited and Ducks Unlimited and others in kind of the hunting and fishing conservation space do a lot of habitat restoration and reconnection work. Most of our work across the country is restoration. That is repairing places, stream systems and stream habitat, cold water habitats that have been damaged or degraded in one way or another, and that are priority waters for particularly native salmonids that are trout and salmon species. And much of that funding for this work comes from federal and state sources. I think it remains to be seen what the effects are of the second Trump administration's efforts to reduce government size and cost. There's a current pause on funding for some of the money sources that we rely on to do our restoration projects. Most of that money gets passed through to local contractors and laborers, people to operate the backhoes and front loaders and fell the trees and do the other kinds of prevailing wage jobs, good jobs that many communities are now reliant on because the restoration economy, which has kind of grown and evolved with the outdoor recreation economy, which is now a $600 billion animal annually, has become a pretty vital for a lot of rural communities now that were formerly dependent on resource extraction. Old timber towns and such where that's no longer economically viable, and so there are real jobs, good jobs, kind of at stake here in the kind of communities that I think this, the Trump administration and any president would care about.
And just kind of in general for Trout Unlimited and you being the California policy director, what are some of the big picture issues that you are grappling with and may be concerned about and hopeful about for the future in California with your organization?
Right. So trout need water. And trout and salmon need water. That's the bottom line. There's no fishing or hunting opportunity without productive habitat. That's kind of the most basic principle upon which, everybody with a rod and a gun depends. We need good habitat. We also need access to that habitat. But mostly you have to have places where fish and wildlife can thrive enough to be fishable or huntable. So the populations have to be robust enough to sustain a fishery or, a hunting season. And we've lost over the last 150 years so much productive habitat, some of which because we didn't, maybe know all of the, kind of downside effects of what we, what we did to these landscapes and waters. And sometimes because it was a trade-off that we made, but we're now in a time where we have to, especially as the warming climate is making things in many areas hotter and drier and putting additional pressures on water supply, snowpack, which translates to runoff, which translates to water supply for both fish and wildlife and people. And so we're committed to identifying those places that are most at risk for cold water fish and water sources and to trying to better protect and or restore them so we can, our children and theirs will have at least some of the same opportunities to experience the amazement of connecting with trout and salmon in their natural waters.
And if for somebody perhaps that's listening to this, that's, not interested in fishing, why should they support an organization like Trout Unlimited?
Good question. I think the bottom line answer is that everybody cares about clean water. And trout and salmon are highly sensitive to water quality. They have a narrow window of tolerance for temperature and water quality, and so they're kind of like canaries in the coal mine of when water quality, when a stream starts to become polluted, say. And so if a trout can live in a stream, it's almost by definition clean and healthy. And nobody wants a polluted waterway running through their backyard or through their community or from which they have to draw their water. So the work that we do to protect clean water sources and to restore aquatic habitats that have been degraded or disconnected for one reason or another benefits everybody, fish and people both.
And can people in communities, you know, near some of these waterways and streams and beautiful places, can they get directly involved by you maybe doing some kind of stream cleanup, things like that? Do you run programs like that for the public where they can, you know, get a hands-on experience trying to, you know, make their stream a cleaner place?
For sure. Trout Unlimited operates mostly through a network of over 400 local chapters across the country. In California, we have a dozen, I think, at this time. And folks can go onto our website, www.tu.org, and find pages and links to our various chapters and state councils. And many of our chapters do kind of stream cleanup type events, host youth fishing instruction and youth like aquatic ecology instruction, things like that. So there are lots of opportunities for that sort of thing. And often our local folks will partner with other like-minded groups or resource agencies. In the Redding, Red Bluff area, for example, our Shasta Trinity Cascades chapter based in Redding does an annual cleanup of the Lower Sacramento River in conjunction with a number of other partners that has a lot of participation from other, you know, non-TU folks and pulls tons of trash out of the river every year.
Well, and like you said, the salmonids, the trout, the salmon, steelhead, they really are the canaries in a coal mine when it comes to clean, cold water. They need water that's clean and cold. They need to have invertebrates that are there for them to feed on. They need a healthy river ecosystem. And we all depend on that in one way or another. Those healthy ecosystems make for healthier communities for people, too.
True. And, you know, who doesn't like to spend time around a nice river or a stream, right? It's one of the kind of natural settings that's most kind of relaxing, appealing, aesthetic. And, you know, especially as things, you know, warm up in many of our communities during the summer, you know, we you know, folks flock to streams, rivers, and lakes to cool off and recreate. And I feel strongly, and I think many others do too, that we really don't want to live in a world and pass on to our children and their children a world in which we don't have trout and salmon, the most beautiful freshwater fishes in our you know, in our waters. We need them, and for a whole bunch of reasons. And so there's a broader importance to the work that we and others do to protect and restore streams and fisheries.
Yeah, and something really simple that you can do, I try to always remember to do this, is just pack a garbage bag with you. And, you know, if you go down to the river or stream and you're hiking or, you know, just enjoying being there, splashing around with your dog, whatever, take a garbage bag with you. If you see some trash, pick it up. You know, yeah, you didn't put it there, but you could still pick it up and make it a better place.
Many of us do that. That's a great suggestion. And there are ways to contribute to both not impacting, places that we like to go, including streams, and lakes that might have trout in them. But I think, if you think of your, backyard creek or the river that runs through your community as part of our, consider them as like part of your home. I mean, you wouldn't want to trash your home. I think about it in that way.
Yeah. And for all our dog owners out there and dog lovers like myself and Matt Fiddler, who produces this show, when you take your doggy to go play in the stream or whatever, make sure you take doggy poop bags, because them pooping out by the stream is not cool. You got to pick that up. And it's not gross. It's easy to do. It doesn't get on your hands. Pick up your dog's poop.
Yeah. And don't let them eat salmon carcasses either. They're toxic for dogs, right?
Yes. Yes. The salmon meat that's cooked is good for them, but salmon carcasses, nasty.
Although the carcasses of salmon are vitally important for the ecology of many rivers and landscapes, right?
That brings the ocean nutrients back into the river system.
Yeah, they literally transport nutrients from the ocean to onshore ecologies. They've documented isotopes that are derived from the marine environment in trees growing as much as a quarter mile from salmon streams.
Wow. Okay, well, let's return to Satitla Highlands National Monument up there in the Medicine Lake area, just east of Mount Shasta. For you personally, tell us about your personal connection to that place and what you love about it.
Well, I think I said earlier, I was kind of awestruck when I went up into the highlands itself for the first time. Travel group found an ice cave, which is one of the geologic features of that landscape. And it's not documented on the map or there's no signage for it, but we were able to get down into it and in the bottom of it. And I don't know, it was maybe 75 or 80 feet deep. And at the bottom of it, there was like 94 degrees on the surface. When we were there, it was quite warm. And down at the bottom of this ice cave, the temperature must have been, I'll bet it was, I mean, I don't know how much colder it was, but there was literally a sheet of ice in the bottom of the cave. We documented it in photos and touched it with our fingers. It was incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And the Glass Mountain area with the obsidian formations was starkly beautiful. I was taken to see places where springs are from all the water that's absorbed by that landscape are come out of the hillside. I just thought it was a kind of a wonderland, and I'm pleased that, especially for the tribe, that it now has that mantle of permanent protection, which, among other things, helps better protect the lands and waters that fish and wildlife depend upon, and that anglers and hunters depend upon also. And by the way, national monument designation does not affect in any way the oversight of fishing and hunting, which is handled state by state by state fish and wildlife agencies. So in California, on the Satitla National Monument, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife retains its authority to regulate fishing and hunting and to set fishing and hunting seasons and rules. But it does require of the managing agency of the monument, in this case, the Forest Service, to prioritize protections for not only cultural resources and water values, but also habitat values, which will help our fishy and furry friends.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing what Trout Unlimited's doing in California in general and at Satitla National Monument and helping to get that to happen. Sam Davidson, the California Policy Director for Trout Unlimited, thanks for being with us and sharing all your passion for this incredible place.
It was my pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me on.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our look at the new Satitla Highlands National Monument in Northern California when we're joined by Brandy McDaniels. She's the lead spokesperson for the Pitt River Tribe that's been fighting to save this special place for decades. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. We're now joined by Brandy McDaniels, the Satitla Highlands National Monument Lead for the Pitt River Nation. She and her people have been sustained by this special place for thousands of years and have been striving for its preservation for decades. Brandy McDaniels, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start out just by getting your personal reflections on how long it's been for you personally and your friends and family in the tribe trying to get this accomplished, to get this national monument status for the Satitla Highlands up there in the Medicine Lake region?
Well, it's been a very long journey for our tribe. The area has been under threat for a very long time. And because of that, the tribe for nearly three decades had been in a litigation with the Bureau of Land Management and Calpine Corporation to ensure the protection of this area. So, you know, literally a lifetime was spent trying to protect this area. And what our elders wanted for this area was permanent protection solutions in the form of a national monument. And, you know, fortunately, for us, we were able to get that accomplished with the last administration. And we were so grateful for that because we don't want to have, you know, our children and our grandchildren to have to spend their lives fighting to protect this very important area, a sacred area for our people. But it's a very valuable area for numerous reasons, but one of them is it's a headwaters of California.
It really is. It's the headwaters for one of the largest spring systems that feeds into the Sacramento River watershed.
That's correct. It feeds the Fall River, which is the largest spring-fed river system in all of California, and some say the entire West Coast, and these waters are very far-reaching. They go all the way to the Bay Area, and they get aqueducted to the furthest reaches of California. And the aquifer is super important, as it holds more pure water resources than 200 of California's largest surface reservoirs combined. And it does that even in drought years. So that's why it's really important to protect this intact buffer to climate change. And that's one of many reasons why it's so important to protect this area that, many people that are knowledgeable of it, it's in their hearts and their minds, and they just love this area.
And you mentioned the battle to save it from threats. Could you characterize, some examples of what some of the threats were? It could be for the Satitla Highlands.
Ongoing project requests to drill into the very fragile and complex aquifer, for geothermal activities that would industrialize the area. There's threats from mining, specific areas in which these areas help, filter that water right? That, and these are pure water resources. These are waters that we use in ceremony. We're able to use these waters without filtration right now. And a lot of people cannot say that, you know, where they're from. And so these are waters that have not been contaminated. And I'm also a person that I'm an elected cultural representative for my band in Pitt River. We have 11 autonomous bands. One of the things I do in my work is we do water testing. And, you know, my colleagues, my non-tribal, you know, colleagues are astounded by the quality of the water, you know, that we have and just open water sources, right? And one was breaking down the science of it. And they're like, well, essentially what I'm saying is it's this open water source is the consistency of basically distilled water, right? And mind you, these are water sources where there's, you know, things living in there and doing their thing, right? And in the water. And then sometimes even the Forest Service are planting diseased fish in these areas, right? Which is another issue, but we're still getting those types of readings, right, from these waters from this area. And that's why it's so important. Like I said, one of the reasons why it's so important to protect this area against the ongoing threats. Yeah.
And aside from the water, which is definitely a spectacular resource and some of the cleanest, purest, coldest water I've ever experienced in my life, can you tell me about, you know, what that region means, that area that's been designated a national monument? What some of the other aspects of it are that are special for you and the Pitt River people?
I mean, for us, it is the place of our creation narrative of our people. So obviously that makes it super significant. And it's a ceremonial place. We have our ceremonies there since time immemorial. We've been fortunate enough that we have always, since the beginning of time, since the first twinkling of light, been able to engage with the land in the ways that we do in ceremonial ways. It's a training place. It's a place where you go to receive, you know, those gifts that you're supposed to receive in your life. So there's certain things that we do on the landscape there, but for us, you know, there's also what you can experience in this area that other people, even non-native internationally, have given testimony to, is the healing properties of this area. You know, it is a healing place. There are places within Satitla that are actually called like medicine, right? And, you know, obviously that is not a Pitt River word. That's an English word. And mm-hmm. This gives testimony to the fact that, you know, other people have experienced being like and completely healed after, you know, visiting this place. But what you can experience up in this area is a high quality of silence that you can get in no other place. The night skies, that is really important. And a lot of people don't understand how important, you know, it is to have night skies. You know, there's a lot of light pollution and you know, around it globally. And this is one of those places that you can have the type of experience that we need and the conditions necessary to be in that kind of place to have our ceremonies and do the things necessary in our heritage and our culture.
Well, I can say from experience that the dark skies there are spectacular. And, you know, when you couple that with the waters below you, your feet, and the magnificent cosmos above your head at night, it really is a magical place.
I mean, definitely, it truly is. If you want to call it magic, it is a magical place. It's a place that is very necessary for you know, for us as Pitt River people to be healthy and mentally, physically, spiritually whole. people. We have a deep, as Pitt River people, we have a deep connection to the land. And in our way, one does not exist without the other. So, you know, and the topography of the land, you know, tells the history and stories of our people. So that's why it's so, we're so connected to this area. And then when other people come and explore the area, there is even in the early days when, you know, colonizers came in and whatnot, there are like newspaper clippings where people would do tours into the area, and they were, and it says something like, the wonders around every corner, right? And I mean, there it truly is. I mean, we've been fortunate enough, like, you know, like I said, for us, we can freely drink our water, and it's weird and foreign to us when you can go to another place and they can't, you know, but there's so much there. You know, there's the forest, there's the, you know, the lava flows, there's the caves, there's so many interesting, you know, geologic and the hydrology of the area. It's just a magnificent, you know, beautiful place.
Yes, the obsidian flows there alone are just astounding. And those must be very important, too, for your people going back to the very beginnings of time, because obsidian is a very important, you know, thing for making tools.
It really is. And then there are also, you know, very, you know, special places. That's another threat, too, is some people just aren't respectful in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, you know, there is laws against, you know, destroying, vandalizing, defacing, removing different areas. And some people might come in and say, oh, it's just a rock or this and that. But no, that's actually, you know, part of our culture, our heritage, our, I don't like to even say practice, because we're not practicing. We're doing, people use that word, but like, you know, when we're, carrying on our heritage activities, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, the experience, required, to fulfill the, what we need to do in our culture.
Going forward, are there ongoing threats? I saw something in the news the other day that the local representative to Congress, Doug LaMalfo, is going to try to get the national monument status overturned.
Is that what he said?
Yes.
I guess what I'd like to say is that I don't know why people vote or take positions the way they do, if they're a political, there's this party line, or they're, you know, or they're actually looking at things from a place of what's the best thing to do for the people of the area, or they're just taking marching orders from, they have more allegiance to a party than the people that they represent. You know, I don't know, you know, right? But what I do know is that whoever is in office and wants to run for these positions, they need to represent the people, right? And so we would always want to make sure that they're educated, and we would hold that, them to that, because if they are a representative in any form, all the way to the, you know, the president, right? They should be representing the interests, the best interests of the people that they ran to represent, you know. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of chaos happening, right? In the, if we want to go down this road, there's a lot of chaos happening, and a lot of it doesn't make sense. But I don't want to go too far off.
We don't want to go too far down that path.
From your question,
I think just most simply is just how do you make sure that you keep protecting this place, you know, now and far into the future?
Yeah. So we've been here since time immemorial. We're not going anywhere. We have been given sacred instructions on how to care. If there's something that needs to get done or fixed, we can work on it together. And I think that's the best path forward, is educating folks, working together. We actually in Pitt River have a really good track record of doing exactly that, working with people across party lines, across different belief systems, people that you would think that wouldn't normally be able to come together and work together. We actually have, and we actually have really great relationships with people from very diverse backgrounds and political affiliations. But you know, what we all have in common is we love this area, and that we want to do what we can to protect it for all future, you know, generations.
Brandi McDaniels, the Satitla Highlands National Monument lead for the Pitt River Nation, thanks for sharing your obvious love and passion for this place that your people call home.
I appreciate it, Dave. Thank you so much. In our way, Sesula Aya, which means we're grateful. It's our way of saying thank you.
Thanks again to our guests, Brandi McDaniels, the Satitla Highlands National Monument lead for the Pitt River Nation, and Sam Davidson, public lands director in California for Trout Unlimited. While the national monument was designated at the end of the Biden administration, its status is now a bit uncertain as the Trump administration has sent mixed signals about the desire to undo the national monument status, which is deeply troubling, considering how much work was done to bring all stakeholders to the table over the years to work out its conservation status. And it's also a stark reminder that battles to save special places are never permanently won. Just like democracy itself, it's something that must be vigilantly protected. As someone wiser than I once put it, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.